All right, good morning, everyone. Good to see everybody after a couple of week break. I'd like to say that I'm refreshed, but I'm pretty tired, actually. So, had a chance to go to the beach, one of my favorite places to go, 2 weeks ago, and then came back, and then I had one or two days of recovery, and then I got on a plane and went to Nashville and was there for a week, basically absorbing and having lots and lots of information downloaded to my already full and tired head. And sleeping in a bed that's not my own, and running around in cars, and then traveling home, and got home yesterday, and kind of, you know, that's where I am. But I'm really glad to be back, and good to see faces that I know. It's about 8,000 to 10,000 people at this conference, it's amazing how alone you can feel in a huge group like that, where you're just running around and going place to place. And it was excellent time, came back, and I was really glad to see my wife and to see my home and familiar faces. So good to have you guys here and to be with you. Yeah, open us in prayer. Lord God, thank you for these opportunities to continue discussing the way that you have fearfully and wonderfully made us and the way that you have uniquely designed us. Even as Todd reminded us this morning that your ways and your design is very narrow. Even as we talk about our mind and our brain, Lord, you have given us both sides of the brain, emotional and cognitive and rational. And Lord, it's our design and it's our hope for this class that we continue to grow in our understanding of what it means to live integrated lives and to relate in integrated ways and to actually use the brain that you've given us and uniquely designed for us for your glory and for your purposes. And just thank you for the opportunities to continue to do that, and thank you for your word, which gives us so much information and knowledge. And thank you for again, the opportunity to be here today, and give this time to you now in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. So you've had a chance to hear from John for the last couple of weeks. And so just a couple of quick things to walk us through where we are. First, mention this every week if I can, this website right here. For those of you that have said, hey, I've had to miss a couple of classes, or we ran out of notes or whatever, you can go to this website, which is our church website, and it specifically will have the audio recording of this class, whether John or I are teaching, and then right underneath it, you can download the notes that you have in front of you. So if you have to miss class or not here, then you'll have access to that. Okay, so just where we've been the last couple of weeks, really the whole class, but in particular the last couple of weeks, we've been discussing self-awareness, and John walked you through a roadmap of what self-awareness was, if you remember him talking about his great, exciting experience that he had on Liberty Street and Wolf Street, and the car that he happened to become acquainted with. He was able to walk you through that experience and to take us through the steps. And I understood he engaged you all together in walking through some of the different steps that he went through to become aware of what was going on internally for him. So it's very much of a self-awareness roadmap. So engage, identify, examine, evaluate. That was what we talked about. Now that last one, act, spent some time on that, and that the acting part really focused on the second class that he did, which was on self-regulation. And rather than that, using that clinical term, we're just going to be talking about, we've talked about self-regulation as just being kindness. Okay, so kindness is not necessarily doing what's natural, and what you're feeling, but it's actually deciding what is going to be the most loving and the most other-centered thing to do with what I'm feeling. Okay, and often when we are engaging in relationship, we do kind things even though we're not thinking and feeling those particular things. So John was able to talk some about that. And Scripture actually reinforced that in the Ephesians passage, Ephesians 4:25. Just wanted to remind us of what that, it's 25 and 26. Therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and give no opportunity to the devil. And then down in verse 29, even, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. So just acknowledgement that the things that, you know, when it says be angry and do not sin, hey, we're going to feel lots of things, okay? But it's saying that it's not necessarily kind to take that anger that's going on and express it in ways that are not loving. And so we have to be able to regulate and be kind in order to do that. So the idea of kindness there, it leads to personal responsibility of choice. It is actually a choice to be kind. It's not, I feel kind. It's, I'm going to be kind. And so that's what God has called us to do. It says, in spite of how I feel, I'm thinking of the person I'm looking at and that I'm with at that moment. It's an act of the will. And essentially, it's bending your will to God's will. All right? So that's where we, that's where John took us through. So now we're sort of turning the corner here, and we've been, our focus thus far really has been on how to care for ourselves in a healthy way, and we've talked about self-awareness as being that avenue that we're taking, and regulation as a way that we actually care for ourselves. And now what we want to do is to move towards what it looks like to be other-centered. Okay, so John and I, we spend quite a bit of time together, and not that we're very creative with our words, but you know, we sort of came up with this, we want to hit the road with our roadmap, right? So we had this self-awareness roadmap, the engage, identify, examine, evaluate, and act. And now we want to start looking at what it looks like to move away, or not abandon ourselves, but to integrate our self-awareness and take it with us as we relate to those that God brings to our circles. Okay? So, next part here, John and I talked quite a bit about friendship and relationship. And just, you know, what are some of the differences there? And a couple things we came up with. We think about friends. We have many, many friends and associates, all right? But few deep relationships. Okay, so just think about, you know, we could easily get into semantics. Well, you know, when I say friend, I mean that someone that I have a deep relationship with. But we typically don't call people that we hang out with, oh, I'm in relationship with them. No, we just say, oh, they're friends. All right? They might be work friends. They might be people that you just walk by. You know their name. Maybe you play softball with them. You've had lunch with them a couple times. Those kinds of things. But so we do. As we think about these terms, we have many friends and associates, but few deep relationships. So friends do things together. You're often not requiring anything from them at all. It's often fairly loose. We'll be talking about, we'll be using a word picture later on in the course. It's an iceberg illustration, and then you've got a water line, so to speak. And most of our relationships, or most of our friendships in general, the people that we communicate with, it's more above the waterline sort of kinds of conversation that we're having. Nothing super risky, but just exchanging facts, pleasant interactions, mostly superficial conversation. But we often refer to those folks as friends, and it's good. These are people that we can spend time with, and we can vacation together. We can have lots of interactions together, and even call ourselves friends, and that's a good thing. But generally, there's not a depth and a sense of deep connection, heart connection, with purely just friends. And so that's why we talk about relationship as a difference, and that engaging a friend is different than engaging a relationship. And that's really what we want to talk about. When we talk about relationship, it truly does take two people being vulnerable with each other in order to achieve the connection. And so when we look for biblical relationship, this is the direction that we want to try to go with that. And that combines the skills that we've already talked about, of self-awareness and the ability to regulate or to be kind, and recognizing that other-centeredness is a work that the Lord has to do in our hearts, because we will most often be looking to protect ourselves and preserve ourselves, as John has talked about. Okay, so a couple of things to talk about here. Again, in contrast to contrast these two, are a couple of terms that you've probably heard us talk about before. And so, transparency. When we talk about transparency, we are talking about often what we have with our friends. Okay, but we don't necessarily have vulnerability with our friends. And so we want to compare and contrast those terms a little bit. So transparency, again, truthful, principled, practical discussion, just telling things like they are. How was your week? Oh, I had a decent week. How was your vacation, Greg? Did you enjoy the beach? Just exchanging facts, telling things, truth-telling, not making up things. Oh, well, the trip was great when it wasn't, but we're staying on that sort of factual level. Okay. There's an independent mindset. Okay, so I mentioned earlier, we're not requiring anything from that other person. Things are loose and friendly. There's no expectations necessarily. Possibly some desires. Pleasant interactions, mostly superficial conversation for interaction, and to learn more facts about the person. Okay, so that's generally what's happening when we say we have a transparent relationship. Okay. Comparing and contrasting friends and people that you would say you're in relationship with, okay? Usually the people that you're close with and have vulnerable relationship with, which we'll define that shortly, you often don't need to think about what you're going to share with them, right? Because you can, I don't mean that you just walk in and you haven't thought about what you're going to talk about. But when you sit down with someone that you're vulnerable with, or that's you, it's a person that you have had heart connection with, and you know all of each other's war stories, and you know all of each other's deep wounds and struggles, and places where they stumble at times, their insecurities. You generally don't have to think about what you're going to share with that person, but with friends. The people that you work with, or people that you just sort of hang out with, but you don't really talk, you're not really vulnerable with, you're often more guarded. Okay, does that make sense, what I'm saying? Okay. All right, so we're having to decide how much we're going to share. Yes, we say there is some self-disclosure of situations and problems, but generally it's more of a factual take on things. It's not necessarily how it's impacting your heart, and there's a guardedness, and it's appropriate. We want to be guarded. It's important for us to be guarded with some relationships. It doesn't mean we're shooting for all of our relationships to be vulnerable relationships. Okay, but we want to just acknowledge that there is a difference. All right. So we're often learning. We're sharing our personality. We're sharing facts about person's thinking, their interests. You can discuss many topics without emotional entanglement. Might be someone you talk with about politics. It might be someone you talk about the Redskins. Okay, that's the sore subject right now. And what a great game to watch today, the battle of the losers. Redskins 0-5 and the Dolphins 0-5 today. So somebody has to win. So we're gonna hopefully get at least one. One win. So
tanking for two.
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, so you get the idea. So there's people that you're really comfortable with that, you know, you can talk about all of these different topics a lot, but not necessarily connect on a heart level. Okay. All right. So that's some of transparency. So there's a reasonableness. We can say that transparency, you know, we've talked about, you know, we've got a left and a right brain, and the left brain tends to focus much more on, you know, logic and sequence. It's in the more of the rational thought that we have, and that the right side is more of the emotional, more the subjective side of things. And generally, transparent relationships are more left brain. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, in the sense that they're more about facts and more about situations and more rational approach when we talk with folks. Okay, it's not devoid of the right side of the brain, the emotions, but leaning and much more trajectory of that way. All right, so vulnerability. Talk about that a little bit. Okay, honest personal disclosure. All right, so healthy relationships require a mutual vulnerability and respect and a commitment to the person regardless of their choices. Okay, and there's one exception there. We'll get to that. Let's see here. All right. So when we say regardless of their choices, okay, if you have a close friend that you're in relationship with and that you have vulnerability with, okay, when something happens to that person, you're deeply impacted by it. Okay. You hear about a friend and you might, oh man, that stinks. Oh, that must be really hard. Okay, but you have to catch a breath when someone you're close with, okay, and that you have a vulnerable relationship with, when something happens to them, it impacts you. Imagine betrayal when you think about a marriage, or when you think about a close friend relationship that you've had, and something happens. You're preoccupied with it. It's hard to be in the present because you're just so preoccupied with, you know, what's going on with this person, and you know, you might be grieving, you might be hurting for them. You know, betrayal is one thing that can happen, that can actually impact commitment, whether it's adultery in a marriage, or whether a friend commits a crime. You know, someone that you've got deep vulnerability with, and they commit a crime against you and they betray you, then that relationship could actually end, and often does end. But that's often a difference than with friendships. There's an interdependency in these kinds of relationships. When we have lunch with somebody that we love and that we are vulnerable with, and there's a mutual exchange for that, and we sit down and have lunch together, I'm coming to that meeting expecting to receive and to have things come my way that are going to impact me. I might expect questions that are going to disrupt me or challenge me. I might faithful are the wounds of a friend. Scriptures, Proverbs says. I might have expect that there's an interdependency where when we get together, we are we're giving our heart to each other and exchanging things that are vulnerable. And there's risk, as it says here. We're disclosing and owning who we are, our emotional and spiritual struggles and wounds, trauma that we've been through. Might have been that week. It might have been in our past. So there's risk that's undertaken to have these relationships. And there's a risk of being ridiculed, rejected, or shamed. And so we are truly putting ourselves in a risky position. And Scripture, actually, there's a verse, iron sharpens iron. And we've talked about that before. If you don't risk, you rust, is the comment that John actually told me about. And so when Scripture calls us to sharpen each other in relationship, that only happens in interdependent and vulnerable relationships generally, because the kinds of things that you're trying to sharpen that God might be using you to do in that person's life are often very risky things. And so with vulnerability, we're really shooting for actually using both sides of the brain. Okay, so whereas we said transparency tends to be more of the rational side of the brain, when we're being vulnerable, there's an integration of both. Okay, and John, jump in if there's any things at times here.
Yeah, I'll just say a little bit on relationship. You're committed to that person other than betrayal, no matter what. I had a good friend of mine that ended up getting in the drugs, and he was all ashamed. And we met and we talked, and I said to him, I'm going to be your friend no matter what, even though you're being an idiot, okay, and you're doing something to destroy, I'm still going to be your friend. He didn't know what to do with that. That's a relationship. You're committed to that person regardless of their sin and or stupidity, and the good news is they're committed to you that way too. So if you really belong to one another, you can probably, the average male, if he's really working on it, can probably have five friends. I'm going this weekend with pastors I've been meeting with for 20 years. And we used to be young pastors together and talking about how bad the churches are, and now we talk about how our bodies are fading. So we do those kind of things. Also, the language that you use is very important. We use very poor language in this church. Hi, this is my hot button. Hi, how are you? And we keep walking. That's an intimate question for interdependency. Okay? So you want to be careful when you are in a good interdependent relationship of your words. Okay? When I was on staff here, people would ask me how I am. I go, thanks for asking. And they turned blue. They just ask me how I am while they're running to the worship room. Thank you. So be careful of your words.
Yep. Very, very true. All right. So again, the last couple of weeks, very much of understanding what self-awareness is and what regulation is, and realizing that, and the point that we've been trying to make is that unless we have self-awareness and unless we have self-regulation, it's going to be very, very difficult to actually move towards other people in the way that God calls us to. And so what we're gonna start doing here is talking about a roadmap to other-centeredness, okay? And I'm just going to put up three steps here that we're gonna take, that we're going to be looking at. And I'm gonna call these skills and directions that we're going, okay? Being other-centered and being able to pursue and cultivate our relationships are skills that take time to learn, and doing this, it might look like it's very simple as we walk through it, but it's actually can be fairly difficult at times because people are very complex. But we want to start with these skills and just getting them out, and then over the weeks to come, we're going to be unpacking even more some of the details and the things that get in the way of trying to do this well. And so, but we want to at least get some things on the table. So entering in is the first one here. Okay, so when we say entering in, what we're looking at here is we want to hear and understand what someone is experiencing. Okay, so if we're entering into a relationship, the goal is to hear and to understand what someone is experiencing. Okay, so we're starting with that. Okay, now there's a common mistake here. And so backing up a minute, so we're not just hearing the words or getting a sense of circumstances, okay? We are, we're listening to emotion, we're listening to emotional language that might be present, we're watching for emotional gestures, we're listening to tone of voice. We've made the point before that only about 10% of communication and message is in the words, right? So these other, if we're going to be dialed in to someone as a whole person and dialed into their emotions, not just their circumstances and thoughts. That's why it's so important to be aware of those other nonverbal, what is the body communicating, what are the gestures, and the tone of voice and those kinds of things. So common mistake is to think, what would it be like for me if I was this person? So a person is talking with you about a variety of different topics. And over the next few slides that we talk about, we're going to assume that these people that are talking to these two people that are talking to each other, one has shared that their spouse committed adultery. Okay, so that's where we're going to start. Okay, so that's sort of the background and the circumstances of the next few slides, and as we walk through these different skills. All right, so. So often the mistake, you know, what would it be like for me if it was this person? So maybe the person shares what happened and their spouse cheated on them. And the first thought that you might have as the listener is, oh, you must have been, I would have been really angry to get that information. I would have been ticked. I can't believe. It's just unbelievable. Yeah. And so when we make the mistake of starting at that place, okay, where do you think that there could be problems? Yeah.
Well, someone who may respond in anger, another person might be devastated. So they might be broken and sobbing and upset, whereas this person would be angry. So mm-hmm. A completely different response.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yep. Okay. Any other thoughts on why we might not start just with how we're feeling about the information that came our way?
Yeah. Well, just it shifts the focus off of the person you're talking to and onto yourself, projecting yourself over them.
Exactly. So when we do this, when we make this our starting point, it's exactly what you said. We often end up exploring our own hearts rather than the other person's. And we assume that another person's heart is just like ours. Oh, well, of course they're going to be angry. So I'm connecting with them, you know. But you know that's where we're deceived, and we don't end up learning much about them at all. We end up revealing ourselves and how we would respond to their situation, and you know we're not really being other-centered at all, are we? You know, so that's a common mistake. And when we do that, it often leads to misunderstanding the person, missing their experience, and essentially your world is eclipsing their world, and that's what's happening when we do that. And so entering in means to invite another person to tell you what it is like for them to be them. Okay? It's not you imagining that you are them. Okay? And there's a big difference to that. All right, so we have to make room to hear things that we might not expect. Okay, so maybe I'm feeling anger right away, and so that's where we have to regulate. It's not kind for me to start with me and how I'm doing when I just ask them how they're doing. And so kindness, okay, I need to regulate. I'm feeling anger. Okay, but I don't know what they're feeling because I haven't asked them. Tell me, what's this been like for you? It must be incredibly difficult.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing that is really important with this, and John touched on it, is the timing of when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it when you pass, like John said, you're on your way into church, just because you see them doesn't mean the timing is right for this. I've had a lot of that lately. Appreciating the interest, but the timing is miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was at a wedding recently, and I must have had a half a dozen people come up with the "How are you?" and had to divert that to "I appreciate your concern, but we're here to celebrate a joining, a union. I'd rather not talk about it."
Mm-hmm.
And so your timing on the concern. If you're really concerned,
mm-hmm.
do it at a time when it's appropriate
mm-hmm.
to sit down and have that interaction.
Yep, yep.
And my experience has been, for me personally, not to direct it to me, but directing
yeah.
it to me.
Sure, yep.
The timing bites.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. And that's coming up in the notes, so we're on the same wavelength. We're in the same wavelength. So thanks for sharing that. So again, as Corey was sharing over here, we might be feeling anger, but there could be a variety of other things that that folks are feeling. You know, this idea, you know, blaming themselves. You know, that it's my fault that this person had the affair because I've been avoiding, you know, I've been very distant and this kind of thing. That might be something that could come up. They're feeling ashamed and humiliated. Everybody must think I'm a terrible person to deserve to be treated like this. Yes?
I don't disagree with anything you say, but isn't thinking that a way to develop empathy for the person?
Okay, so when the emotion first comes up inside of you, okay, if you decide to roll with that emotion, okay, I'm feeling angry, so they must be feeling angry, then essentially you're saying that you have the ability to mind read and that you have the ability to know what they're thinking and feeling. And so if I assume that what I'm feeling and thinking, oh, they must be thinking that too, then I'm not honoring them and giving them the opportunity to speak their mind in their heart. Okay. So, yes, if you're feeling angry, then you'll have the ability in the relationship to empathize when they're angry, right? Because you understand anger as an emotion in your own heart, but even the anger in our own heart can be different than the anger in the other person's heart. So, yeah.
So you're basically saying the difference is I might say, how are you feeling? And then when they tell me, I can empathize. When they say, I'm feeling devastated about this, then I can enter into that emotion with them.
Sure.
Or
yep.
Or I can enter into that with them because they told me
right.
how they're feeling, and then I can.
Exactly. So now instead of preemptively assuming what they're thinking and feeling, you've allowed them to share what they're thinking and feeling, and then you're responding back. And that's one of the next steps we're going to talk about. Yeah, Corey. Sure.
Sorrow or
oh, absolutely.
Anger or anything. So
yeah.
Empathy doesn't have to be you feel the exact same way.
Oh, of course not.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can separate that.
Yeah.
Empathy just means caring about that person and being like, whatever you're feeling, I know you're in some kind of pain.
Right.
Whatever form that's taking, I want to be there for you.
Sure.
So I just think it's important to realize that we don't have to necessarily be feeling what they're feeling to empathize.
That's right. That's right. And the big thing is to not be preemptive.
Exactly.
You know, you're going to empathize. Your empathy will be received and have more teeth to it if you've given them the opportunity to share what they're feeling first. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, I saw another hand. Yeah.
While we're talking about empathy, it might be important to
differentiate
between sympathizing with someone
mm-hmm.
and empathizing.
Sure. And those are great topics, and they're coming up down. No, don't be sorry. No, John and I are like smiling when we hear these comments. It's like, great, you know, so the things we're thinking about, talking about, we've got plans for that. So we'll be going into more depth with that at another time. So just, you know, at the street level here, you know, just this, what is this idea of entering in and what does that look like? So, you know, the person blaming themselves, they could feel ashamed. They could, you know, they're such a terrible person. They could feel, how about just they're feeling afraid? You know, they're losing their family. Their family will never be the same. The family is falling apart. Oop, I don't need the stink bug. There's others that are feeling numb. There's so much happening at one time that they don't really know what they're feeling because they're so overwhelmed. So those are all examples of what that person could be feeling that is not the anger that we're feeling as they talk to us. And so to be able to give them the opportunity to talk about those things. Okay, so number two, the next thing. So connecting is this next piece here. So connecting, it means that you tell someone what you have heard and demonstrate that you have heard it. Okay, this is where connecting starts. We'll come back to that. So simple words can convey that you've heard. And so essentially when we talk about demonstrating that you've heard what they say, there's a skill that we're trying to implement here, and that is essentially what we say, reflecting back feelings or summarizing what you believe you've heard them to say, clarifying things that you think that they've said, and giving them the chance. Well, that was, yeah, Greg, what you just said there, yeah, that's kind of where we are, but there's this other piece here. And so then I would come back and say, so what you're saying is, you know, you're feeling this way or you're thinking this. And so that idea of, am I hearing you right? Am I tracking with you? Hey, I just want to make sure that I'm tracking with you. Some of you have probably heard me say that before, where, you know, as you're talking, I might just say, you know, just want to make sure I'm tracking with you. This is what I heard you say. Is this what you mean? Okay, because, you know, we can take words. How many words are there in the English language that just beg for a definition, for clarity? Okay, so if I walk around this room, okay, tell me what does love mean? Tell me what love means. What is friendship? What is sadness? What is sorrow? What is grief? Okay, I'm going to get 50 some odd different answers here. Okay, I don't want to just understand, you know, what that word means, and hopefully it means what it means to me, but I want to know what that word means to you. Okay, and so if someone wants to feel heard, we want to demonstrate that we've heard it, we are working hard and we're asking questions to clarify and make sure that we are tracking, that we're in the same wavelength as the person that we're meeting with and that we're talking with. Okay, so as we go here, just there's some examples. Okay, so going, remember the context of adultery. So a friend has told you, a person that you're in deep relationship with, that they are that their spouse committed adultery, and instead of the anger that you're feeling, they say, I'm really afraid. So this would be an example, and again, these are clearly examples. They're not scripts. Okay, so it's not, oh well, if I just say these words that automatically connects, but this is just an example. So you might say, I want you to know that I can see and I can hear how scary this is for you. You know, you're afraid that your family is falling apart. I'd be afraid too. Okay. Now, this is presuming that they have already told you how they're feeling. So, you know, hey, tell me, remember the previous step, tell me what this has been like for you. Okay. And then they've told you that side. All right. And then you're asking more questions, and then as they speak and they talk, you're reflecting back, you know, what you're hearing them say. And so we're striving for helping them to know that they've been heard and helping them to know that you're understanding what they're saying. Okay, that clarifying. They don't just use a word and, well, you just assume you know what they mean by that. But, okay, now when you say this word, is this what you mean by that? This is what I think I heard you say. Is that right? And then they're able to say, yeah, that's it. I'm tracking with you. Or, no, it isn't that. Okay, so you're doing that hard work of doing that. And then another component of all of these statements, or a number of them, is the idea of validation. Okay, so we're hearing and we're understanding but I'd be afraid too. My spouse had an affair. Okay. Why is that validating? Thoughts?
It's letting them know that what they feel is okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Being safe.
Right. And how might that person feel when they say, I'd be afraid to? Or think about yourself. Think about a time when you've been going through a hard time and you've shared something with a close relationship. And they say, yeah, I get that. I would feel that way too. What happens to you? What happens to your heart?
Well, that you're not oddly feel like it's okay to feel this way. Others could feel that way too. You're not out there and you've
right.
thrown out something and something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard folks say, you know, when you are afraid, in fact, whenever we are emotionally escalated, okay, we can often feel alone. Nobody gets me. Nobody understands me. And to have someone validate, wow, the way you're feeling, I would feel that way too. Incredibly connecting, oriented. Okay, and that's really what we're shooting for. All right. So in a case of, you know, if they're feeling ashamed, I understand that you feel ashamed and that you really want to hide right now. Thank you for not hiding from me. I care. I'm here. So reinforcing when, again, someone might feel very alone. When you're ashamed, what do? What did Adam and Eve do in the garden when they were ashamed? They hid, right? And so for that person to say, I understand how you'd want to hide, but I'm here, and thank you for coming out of hiding with me and reinforcing that you care. The numbness. You know, it sounds like you're in an emotional shock. You don't feel anything right now. I get that. This is overwhelming. There may be too much happening for you to even know what you're feeling right now. So again, validating and summarizing what you've heard them say. Now, some of these statements, you can often put question marks at the end, or it could start by, what I think I hear you saying is that, you know, you're in shock, you know, and that you're pretty overwhelmed, you know, as a way of giving them an opportunity to clarify. Or, you know, after you make a statement like that, based on hearing what they've said, you know, you might just say, am I tracking with you? You know, just anything, a little short sentence at the end, just to give them the opportunity to correct or clarify, or you know, just provide more information. All right. So that's the.
I think that's really important to use the word "give them the opportunity." What do you do if they don't take it and they just are self-reliant and they figure things out for themselves, and then you figure it out and you both are relaxed together? You might have lunch and be together, and maybe neither of you needs to talk about it. Does that happen?
Oh, sure.
You can go forward maybe praising the Lord for one thing or another.
Sure.
And so I think some problem solving for people has done that way.
Right. Oh, absolutely. In the context of adultery that we're talking about, it's more complicated than that. And so, but yes, there are often conversations that we have where it doesn't necessarily go into this kind of depth. Sure, yeah, that's, and part of that's the difference between friendships and people that we are deeply committed to, and there's a vulnerability that's there. Okay, does that make sense? Okay.
Well, and in the context of serious, like in adultery, it's not just one of these.
Right.
It's gonna be a lot of
them. Of course, these are just examples.
Right. But I mean, it's like, right.
Sure.
It's not like, oh, this is what I'm, so be careful not to, this is what you're, you know, and going with that.
Yep, exactly.
That plus 20 other.
Oh, for sure. And again, timing, which is coming, you know, very important to give them the opportunity to talk about what they're thinking and feeling. You're just simply asking the questions and you're pursuing them, but you're not taking your own stuff. You're not starting with that.
Us to
opportunity, I'll be here. If you don't want an opportunity, then
sure. Sure. Yeah. And so, and some of the presumption, some of the assumption of what we're talking about here is that you're talking with someone that you have a relationship with, and they've both decided that they want to talk. You know, in those cases, you know, this is kind of what we're working with. But yeah, but in terms of cultivating relationships, if you don't necessarily, maybe you have that person that you hang out with a lot and you do a lot of things with, but there hasn't been a lot of hard exchange that's occurred, that could be a great entry gate or a thought to throw out. Hey, you know, I'd love to have coffee sometime if you'd like to talk more about something that you mentioned. And then, you know, so there's, it's very, you throw that out there and then kind of fishing a little bit and then see if they're interested in pursuing that more. And that's often how deeper relationships happen, you know, where trust is built and they spend a lot of time together. Yeah, it's been more cognitive and more just doing things together, not much heart, but then they start to, you know, I feel more comfortable around this person, and so I want to go deeper, and that might be a way to start it.
And can you say things like, this is something that interests me, I'd love to talk with you.
Sure, yeah, if you're up for it. You know, again, not, you know, don't want a demanding spirit, you know, hey, I really need you to, can you talk with me about this? I really, you know, but exactly like you said, it is great, you know, just sure. Yep. All right. Okay. So some connecting mistakes that we often do. So again, we've entered in, tell me what this has been like for you. And then they've shared a number of feelings and thoughts that they're having. And then, you know, you're working hard to hear and to understand what they're saying and reflecting back and summarizing some of what you've heard and clarifying that this is what I think I heard, okay? And often what we can do is move into a fixing mode. And that's an important question to ask here is how does moving, when you're talking with someone and you can tell that it's moved into a fixing mode at this point, how does that impact you?
It shuts you down.
Can you say more? How does it shut you down?
Well, you may not be at that point where you can receive what they're saying. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Yep. Yep. Any other thoughts? And those are good. Thanks, Billy.
That's really true. You need to fix me. That implies that I have a problem and something's wrong, maybe in the way of thinking. So now I'm a project that needs to be fixed as opposed to a person who has a feeling and needs to move through it.
Yep. Yep. And to think about if this is especially, you know, and this gets to timing, and that's coming up on this slide. This is someone's been wrestling and struggling with an issue for their entire life, okay? And you're having a conversation with them. It's maybe the first or second conversation. All of a sudden, you have solutions. How arrogant! Now there are solutions in your mind that you might have, and that actually could be helpful, but to the timing of sharing something like that in the early stages of conversation are very damaging. You want to build trust with that person. You want that person to be heard. Young Life has an MO that they have. It's you want to earn the right to be heard, you know, as you move towards folks. And so that principle, you know, you're building trust, you're being other-centered, you're thinking about them, you want to understand their world. I know how I feel about what you're talking about, but it isn't about me, it's about you, and I want to get to know you, I want to understand you, what's it like for you. And when that's all happened, then generally the time does come when, you know, so what do we do with this? Yeah.
Well, and my idea of fixing your problem might not be the solution that you need for fixing
mm-hmm.
A lot.
Right, right. And Not to mention the fact that we aren't in the business of fixing.
Right. Walk alongside.
Right.
I can't fix what is your problem.
Right.
But I can walk with you as you fix your problem.
Right. 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 Exactly. So, all right. So another mistake. We communicate that their emotions need to be adjusted in some way, or that things are not as bad as they think. Okay, so, yeah, John.
Christians are masters of these two. Here's two scriptures. I'll call you in the morning, and you'll be feeling better soon.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, God is sovereign, so we got to be careful. We can move into fixing mode with scriptures. We really have to be, nothing wrong with scripture, but we really have to be careful.
Yep. Exactly.
We both have seen that a lot.
Yeah, Jonathan.
One thing that I've been convicted with over the years, because I'm a master at this. Mm-hmm. I hear someone's pain, and especially if it's someone like we're talking that's very close, and I either find the silver lining to quote-unquote encourage them, or I go into fixing mode. And one thing that I've learned probably in the past year is that part of the reason I do that is because I'm uncomfortable sitting in the pain with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like my comfort too. And when you enter into this level with somebody, it, like you said, it hurts you too. And so my next move is, how do we make this better so that neither of us is feeling this pain?
Right.
Like this, you know?
Right.
And we try to make ourselves better by trying to make them feel better.
Exactly. And so this other-centered shift that we're moving towards and that we're striving for is sabotaged, and it goes back to us, and now we're almost distancing ourselves. The very thing that you're trying to do, you're actually stepping away from. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think after you have, if they've just shared and you jump into fixing mode, have you really heard what they have and processed what they've said? Because, or are you in there while they're talking, thinking about, here's a solution?
Right. Yeah.
And I think we also need to sit back and go, why are we doing this? Are we doing this to help you, or are we doing it so I feel better about you? Are you with me?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I play with things sometimes because I get nervous. I've actually destroyed my pen. It's broken. I'm very sorry. Please tell me that. Please say what you were saying again.
Yeah. But an example, okay, when the funeral home came to pick up Larry's body, my neighbor across the street saw them leave our driveway, and they had not hit the stop sign at the end of the street before she came over with food. Her intention was wonderful. Her timing was horrendous, because we hadn't had a chance to adjust the fact of our reality.
Yeah.
And then I'm called to be gracious about her gift. Timing is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think piggybacking on that too is kind of like, we can think of it like, okay, I did that. I checked it off. I took the food. I may have texted them or whatever I did. Checked it off. Off
right.
My list.
Right.
And maybe we had that desire to really care, but here again, the timing is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very good points.
So in that point, it's about that person, not about the one you're trying to show care for.
Right. That's right. Yep.
I think too, there's just some ignorance sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many people in the world sit in class like this? You know, I mean, honestly, like, that's where the grace comes into, and it's really hard when you're suffering to offer grace to someone who's ignorant.
Yeah.
But that's what grace is for, and thank God we have a gracious God who gives me grace in my ignorance. You know.
Well said. Yeah, and we will be in those situations, like what we're hearing here. Where people will be doing things and it's not helping us, and yet we're called to regulate those things as well,
right.
And to be gracious and to be kind. in our responses to that. But it is very difficult. It's very challenging. Yeah.
Just piggybacking on what Zach said, I find that common in families too, where there's this effort to be helpful, to fix things instead of empathizing. And then when someone honestly doesn't understand, judging that person immediately and going, what's wrong with you? You know, you screwed up. You didn't raise me right. You didn't do this. Instead of going, they're just simply ignorant to what they're doing, and having sympathy and compassion for them, which actually heals you too.
Right.
When you recognize that what they're doing is honestly out of a heart to try to fix the situation, and they're just ignorant to what they're suffering.
Yep.
You know, the fact that they aren't compassionate, that they're making all these mistakes.
Yep.
You know, that you've listed here, and they don't even realize it.
Yep.
That gives a certain level of compassion for those people too.
Yep, it's a good word. Yep. Gina.
Well, and another thing about timing.
Speak loud too. Yep.
Another thing about timing that I understood in my own experience is, yeah, a lot of people, when you've lost a loved one, will come at you right away. And whereas it's a good thing that that's not the good time, it's after everything is all said and done and the dust settles is when you can feel the most lonely, because reality, everybody kind of goes back to their own life, and then you're trying to figure out what your new normal is, and that's the time where you can really use somebody to come alongside you and say, hey, you know, tell me, how are you doing? It's a very dangerous, you know, phrase, but, you know, that's when even just sitting beside everybody and cry is something that's very valuable, because oftentimes you can feel the most lonely after the funeral and after the dust settles. Everybody's gone back, and the meal's been made. Everybody kind of goes back to their world, but your world has just mentally changed. You're trying to figure out what life is going to be like now.
Yep, that's right.
Which would also apply in the situation of a broken marriage.
Yeah, right.
Because life's going to be different.
Yep, that's right. That's right. So to give people space and time to be able to make sense out of all that's going on, especially after a crisis. And we'll end with this last thing because it's been brought up already. We offer biblical truths or trite phrases, a big mistake, that might be helpful at another time but don't meet the needs of the moment. So again, it's not saying that biblical truth is not an important element of our deep relationships and actually connecting and loving and caring for people well, but the timing is very important. You know, as Jonathan was saying, you know, we want it to have it be for them, not for us. Okay, so that's what these phrases, they're sort of conversation shutdowners, so to speak, when we do that. So, all right, so we're out of time for today. Thank you for your questions and your discussion. We'll just pick up where we left off here next week, and we'll finish our discussion on this part, and let me go ahead and close in prayer for us. Lord, thank you for these moments together, and Lord, thank you for the rich conversation that we were able to have here today as a class, and Lord, you know what's going on in our hearts and our minds, and just pray that you continue to be doing the sanctifying work in our hearts of showing us where you want to change the way that we approach relationships, and whether it's self-awareness, whether it's regulation, whether it's how I relate to other people, Lord, just pray that you continue to do the work that you have committed to do in our lives, and just pray that we would be cooperative recipients of the Spirit's work in our lives. We give the rest of this day to you now in Jesus' name. Amen.